welcome to 30 Plus One, the podcast, the community and all-round connect for music managers. And because I couldn't get anyone else to do this, here I am, your host, Kadee Campbell. Hello and welcome. This is episode 2 of 30 Plus One for music managers. Yes, I made it to episode 2 and I'm really glad to welcome you if this is the first time that you're listening, but also to say welcome again, even more so if this is the second episode that you're listening to. So yeah, thank you very much. Really grateful for all the support. So today we're going to take it back to basics a bit and we're going to talk about setting up your own music management business. But before I get into it, I just want to make a point of clarity for something that I said in episode 1, where I was talking about show notes and where to find them. So there will always be show notes and you will always be able to find them on the 30plus1.co website. But as I'm sitting down and recording this, and when I recorded the first episode, I haven't yet synced the tech side, so I can't give you the exact links. But what I can say with certainty is that I will have a page for podcasts, and then the episodes will clearly be labeled according to their number. So this one is episode 2, the one before episode 1, next one's episode 3, you get it. So yeah, that will be easy enough to find there. So getting right back into it, as I said, today we're going to talk about setting up your own music management business. So you may be new to music management and not come from a background of formal training from a college or a university course. So you may be completely new, or you may have been managing someone for a little while now, but you just may have been doing it informally. Or you may be an artist who's managing yourself. So if any of those scenarios apply to you, then this is a good session for you. What we're going to cover is we're going to look at the legal business structure for a management company, a UK business structures. We're going to look at professional relationships. We're going to look at engaging artists and also the contract, which will cover things such as the artist management relationship and fees and royalties and commissions and all of that good stuff. It's pretty packed. So yeah, I'm just going to keep it moving. So areas will need more detail. I feel like this is something I should just start every podcast with, maybe put it in the intro. But again, I will be led by the listeners and your feedback that I receive, which to facilitate a discussion process, what I will do is I will post to the Facebook page when a podcast is out, and then we will be able to have feedback and discussions via the Facebook page. So that's where you'll be able to steer what happens in the episodes and which subjects get their own episodes. So that should be good. So the thing to remember, and this is probably going to be one of the things that I keep saying, is that whilst music is in the entertainment industry, music management is a business and it's still a business. So as with most businesses, a good place to start is with a strengths and weaknesses assessment. Also, this point is more about administration. So even in terms of running your own business, being able to get online and do the registrations that you need to do and fill in whatever applications you need to do and all of those kind of things. You need that for yourself, and you need that for your artist as well. And another key skill would be leadership. An artist manager essentially brings people and projects together. So an artist together with a label, an artist with another collaborator, they bring them together. And in order to do that successfully, you do need to be a good leader, because people need to be able to trust you to coordinate that connection and to coordinate a project. So you definitely need that. And under that, I would say, and this is also linked to being good at business, is an entrepreneurial spirit. You need to be a self-starter. You need to be able to work from your own initiative. It's not going to work if you're sitting around waiting for someone to just tell you what to do. Don't get me wrong. As many of you will know, the artists that you work with will always have a lot of activities for you to be getting on with. But for a good manager, you definitely would need some kind of entrepreneurial spirit for sure. Good at handling relationships, key. You need to be able to vary your approach depending on who you're speaking to, whether you're working with your artist. There needs to be, you know, that's the core relationship, but then there's also relationships with, as I said, labels, promoters, venues, etc. You ideally would want another strength. Well, yeah, another strength for a manager would be contacts in the industry. If a manager is really well connected, if a manager knows A&R people in different labels, if a manager knows tour managers, if a manager knows a person where they can get discounted merchandise, all of these things will work to an artist's benefit and they will make a manager more desirable. So if you don't have those, you don't have any of those, then you need to be good at developing those contacts, and you need to be fairly quick at doing that, and it needs to be high up on your priorities list. You should also have some music industry knowledge. This is one of the easier ones to plug, to be honest, just because there are so many courses out there, there are so many books, there's so much information online, so it's always work. You have to keep educating yourself about it, but it's not the hardest thing to do. You need to know terminology when it comes to dealing with contracts. You know, you need to know what things like royalties mean, or when you're working with a promoter and they talk about PA systems, which is really just all the tech that's needed for a live show to happen, then you need to know these things. But I think it's also about knowing what opportunities are available for your artist as well. So the more you know about the industry, the more you'll be able to say, okay, I think this would work really well on this platform, for example. Let's do a YouTube video. And, you know, so I think knowing the industry comes into play for, yes, being able to negotiate and feel your way around it, but also to be able to identify opportunities for your artist. And in doing so, that kind of leads really nicely into the other characteristic, which is about creativity. There's so much information out there, as I said, but you do have to be able to bring some of your own ideas to the table, or even if they are ideas that are out there already and which have worked, which are great, you need to be able to adapt them to the artists that you're working with. And that definitely takes, even though, as I've said before, it's a business, but it, as in all business, it definitely takes an element of creativity to make it work. So those are the ideas that I would say the good qualities for a manager, a music manager. So once you kind of do that assessment with yourself, so see in those areas, but you may also want to expand it about where you're strong within those areas, what resources you have, what support. You know, you may not have music industry knowledge, but you might already be signed up to a course, for example. You may not have a network, but you've just joined a group. So you can do the list yourself and kind of weigh it up. So it's important because it means that you can then plug those weaknesses. So once you, the first step to addressing those weaknesses is identifying them. That's also with your strengths. It means that you are in a good place to position yourself. So when you are, and it's a little bit about the pitch, but for me, it's more about your confidence in knowing what you bring to the table. So if you have your strengths and you know what kind of manager you're going to be, and you know, and you're very clear about what you bring to the table, then you can bring that to the meetings that you have with artists and whoever else in the industry. And it's really clear for you to position yourself, which also helps in terms of branding and text for your website and that sort of thing. I would say that there are two main types of managers. You're either a creative manager, you're not either or, but you may lean more to one side. Maybe let's see it more as a spectrum, and you may be more on the side of creative or as a business manager. Of course, managers have to be all round, but some strengths may lie more heavily in the creative side, and some strengths may lie more heavily on the business side. For a business manager, their strengths are the focus that they have on the operational issues and the detail, their organizational skills, the ability to identify and exploit income streams. Those will be some of the strengths of a business manager. And some of the strengths of a creative manager will be things like music production, identifying collaborators, so other people that artists can work with, because they'll be very connected themselves and aware of what might work, you know, what producer might work with the artist that they're working with. They may even be a producer themselves, which will be another strength and advantage. They'll also have an advantage in being able to influence the creative project. So they may have some more technical advice in terms of the music. So they are, creative managers are normally people that are artists themselves, have been artists before, but are definitely musically trained. I can hands up and say I am not musically, well, let's get this right, because, you know, we don't want to do Mr. Alvarez out of what he actually taught me. I have done up to grade 2 in piano, so I can read music, probably, yeah, just about, but I would definitely not call myself a musician, and would say that I lean more heavily on the spectrum to a business manager, and that is exactly how I position myself. So when you've decided what kind of manager you are, and then you've kind of identified the gaps that you want to plug, the second thing that we're going to look at is what kind of structure you could take for your business, what kind of formal structure. Now, these structures that I'm going to talk about are UK business structures, and I know we may have listeners from different parts in the world. And, you know, as this becomes more evident, and of course, depending on the feedback, etc., then we'll expand on the kind of things that we cover. But for now, I'm going to stick to UK business structures. Deciding which one is right for you is very much dependent on your current situation and your future plans. So the things you want to look at would be how much money you are currently making, how you feel about admin, how prepared you are for it to be onerous, or if you're not prepared at all. There's also a difference in liability. So if a company gets into debt, what level of personal risk and loss is there for the manager? Those are the main considerations. I would say that a lot of advice online, there's a lot. It's not necessarily music industry specific, but there is definitely a lot out there. I found it vague in that they gave you all the information, but they'd be very vague in saying whether or not something was right for you. And I believe that this was a caution, not wanting to lead people down a path that was not appropriate, a structure that was not appropriate for them. I'm going to try and be less vague and just really drill down and not let caution hold me back from saying, okay, this structure is best for this type, this structure is best for this type. But ultimately, as I said, I do understand some of the caution, because it does depend on your short and long-term plans in terms of giving you real advice on which option is the best for you. So definitely don't want to make mistakes about it, but yeah, I don't want to be cautious. We want to just get to it. So the two main structures that I'm going to look at are sole traders and private limited companies. So I'm going to start with sole trader. The summary is a sole trader, it's a bit of a giveaway in the name, is a person is the exclusive owner. So there is one owner and they alone own it. I think that's pretty clear. They are also the one person who's fully entitled to all the profits after tax. That is what you get with a sole trader. Why would somebody want to set up a sole trader, and what are the pros? Well, there's no setup costs. So, yeah, that's pretty self-explanatory. There's no formation fees, which come with the setup costs as well. In terms of maintenance, there's a lower priced accountancy fee. So you'd be looking at spending, if you did engage an accountant, which, you know, your taxes could potentially be less complicated, so you may not need one. But if you did engage one, then you'd be looking at approximately from £200 a year as a sole trader. You would have less admin as well because you have a tax return just once a year. And it's not as a heavily monitored as other business options as well. So cons, that you are liable for debts and there is a potential risk to your asset. So with a sole trader, the sole trader means that the person is the business, the business is the person. They're not separate. So your business is actually registered in your name and then you trade as the business name that you pick. So this means that if your business as a sole trader, which is you, incurs debts, then it could put your assets at risk. So your house, your car, other investments that you have could potentially be at risk. So that's a big con with a sole trader. A sole trader is a good option for you if you are working on projects with low or no financial risk, and if you're not earning much money and you're trying to bootstrap. Now, having learned this lesson, I am so down for bootstrapping, I cannot even describe. So bootstrapping is really just spending as little as possible as you're establishing. For me, the motto now is, if you're not earning, then don't spend. Simple. It's that simple. Bootstrap it. So if you're not earning much, I would very much say that a sole trader could be a good option for you. But of course, you've got to consider these other things as well. If it's also a good option for you, if you don't need the credibility of a limited company. And I'm going to talk about this next. So I won't go into it too much, but a private limited company does come with more vigorous monitoring, which lends an element of credibility to it. So if you don't need that credibility, then a sole trader is for you. If you don't mind also potentially having to change your name at a later date, then a sole trader is also for you. Because unlike with a private limited company, as a sole trader, you, as I said, you register as that individual and you don't register your company name, which means that it could be taken. So there's a potential that your name would have to change. There are some ways you could get around it. Again, I'll talk about that with the private limited company. And one thing to remember about the sole trader choice is that if you are not earning much now, but of course you wouldn't be doing, you know, you wouldn't be setting down the formalized process unless you thought you could make it financially viable at some point, is the good news for you, if that is your plan, is that you can change the structure later on down the line as well. So the setup is easy. If you want to set up, you just go online, and I will put this in the show notes, but the link at the moment for this setting up a sole trader structure within the UK is gov.uk/set-up-sole-trader. So a private limited company, the summary is really that it's a separate legal entity. So what that means is the company is an entity on its own. So where we were talking about the liability for debts with a sole trader, you would not have that with a limited company. A private limited company can also be owned by multiple people. So if you are going into business with other people, then this structure is better suited to you as opposed to a sole trader, which can only be owned by one single person. The pros. So why do you want to set up a limited company? Well, it adds credibility. I kind of touched on this when I spoke about the sole trader. But so depending on the industry that you work in, some clients only want to work with businesses that are limited. So a lot of freelancers, for example, will register their business so that their clients know they're working with a limited company and that their clients will only really spend that money if the company is limited. I would say that as a music manager who's starting up and working with developing artists, that this is less important. I doubt highly that a decision for an artist about whether or not they should go with a management company would rest on whether the company is limited. I'm sure that they wouldn't check it. It would much more rest on the connections that a manager has, the relationship that they have with the artist-manager relationship, how they see that person communicating, how organized they think that person is, etc. I think all of those things would be much more important. This is another pro of setting up a limited company, is that it can facilitate funding applications if that is something that you're interested in. Limited companies, because of that relationship to risk and because they are more rigorously monitored, as I said, that it can, in many circumstances, be easier to get funding as a limited company. There are even some banks that will only set up business bank accounts for companies that are limited. So we've already spoken about the asset protection. We've spoken about the credibility as a pro. There's also a pro relating to tax efficiency. So paying a lower tax rate than you would as a sole trader. So a limited companies pay corporation tax and individuals pay income tax. And corporation tax is a lower percentage than income tax. So you could be paying less tax as a limited company. As I said, think about this because, you know, less tax on 0% of earnings is neither here nor there. But if you're making money, then it's definitely a pro. And you also, as a pro, get to secure your name, the company name that you're operating within. It's yours. You can also, yes, this was something I mentioned before, create trading names under that company as well. So if you're setting up Bucket Management Limited, you could also trade as Bucket Music, let's say, if you wanted to do some other project. So there's that kind of flexibility, which might be good. Again, this really depends on your long-term goals. So some of the cons, I think I've probably said it about 10 times. I am trying not to repeat myself, but I'm also trying not to miss any of the points, is that you have to adhere to more rigorous monitoring, which I've already spoken about. So that is the big con. And also that you will pay higher accountancy fees as well than with a sole trader. So where we were looking at, we were looking at around £200 a year upwards for a sole trader if you were going to engage an accountant. That with a limited company, you're more likely to be looking at, and these are approximations, around £550 a year. So it's substantially more, and that's from £550 a year. So it can go up substantially more as well. A limited company is for you if you're happy to spend that money on an accountant, if you have it available. I would also say, as another point to mention, that if you are earning around £20,000 a year and you have low expenses, that you may find that an accountant actually pays for itself. Again, this is something that could probably do with a bit more detail and maybe, you know, an episode of its own, but that's the general summary information. So that's something for you to think about. It's also for you, as like I said, if you're pursuing funding, because it facilitates that process. If you are working on risky projects, but I would say, you know, there's always going to be an element of risk when you're working with a development artist, that it may, you know, they may or may not reach the heights that you plan to in the beginning. But I don't think it's not that kind of risk. It's more about financially risky projects. So projects that you would have been investing a lot of money in that could potentially go south and leave the company in debt. And if you've got, you know, assets that you want to protect, then limited company should be for you. But I would imagine that people wouldn't necessarily plan the things to go that way. But if you know there's a potential, then this structure could definitely be for you. So that is it in terms of the pros and cons. If you want to set up, it's a pretty similar link, gov.uk/limited-company-formation. That is for the UK government site to set that up. Now, for me, I set up a limited company, but I didn't have that full time, which I hope you guys will take, to really thoroughly consider exactly what structure was best for me. I met an accountant. He was very showbiz. He'd worked with a lot of big musicians and told me all about it. And he's a lovely guy. And I did kind of get a bit sucked in. I was right at the beginning of my music management career as well. And I was charged £600 to set up the business and for annual accounts. Now, this, like I said, it's not necessarily hugely disproportionate. And actually, there were some fees that still came on top of that, some accountancy fees that I still had to pay on top of that as well. So in a year, I spent close to £1,000 in a year. So it was super expensive for me. He convinced me that I needed the protection. So I needed that separate entity as a limited company. But I was working with artists that were making nothing and also that I had very close relationships with. And I just think his advice came from a very... it came from a very set kind of inflexible place where it just looked at the very black and white, but maybe didn't bring along all the pros and cons like I've said to you. And it wasn't catered. It wasn't catered to me specifically. Yes, for some managers and for a lot of managers, especially working with high profile artists or maybe artists, you know, that their relationships might be a bit, you know, strained with, or not even that, but I think for some artists it's appropriate. But for me, starting up with a roster of two developing artists, it really wasn't tailored. That advice wasn't tailored to me, and it's an expensive lesson that I learned. But I'm actually really thankful because it was the lesson that set me down the route of 30 plus 1, which was essentially about believing that there had to be another way, there had to be a cheaper way to get things done, and there had to be a way where you weren't feeling around in the dark and making £600 worth of mistakes on things. So yeah, I've since found out that you can set up a company at Company's House for £12, just to give you a bit of an example of the variation between what I could have paid if I was bootstrapping. You can also use a formation agent. Now, I really like these. I'm sure there's people out there who might have had bad experiences with it, but I've had good experiences. So these formation agents, they can set up the business for you. So you pay them a fee and they set up the business for you. You can also purchase from them things like a registered address and a company director's address as well. Because with the private limited companies, the address is made public. So you may not want to use your home address for that. And with a formation agent, they give you an address that you can use. They also give you an address that you can use for your business to make it look more professional. They can do mail forwarding for you. And as I said, it's a lot, even with all of that. Oh, they also have connections with banks, a lot of them. They'll give you vouchers for Google ads and things like that. And it will definitely be a lot cheaper than £600 for sure, if you do your research out there. So setting up your business, we've covered the formations, we've covered your strengths and weaknesses. Some of the other things that you might want to think about, key things, are insurance and getting that side sorted. Your best bet is to speak to a broker. To speak to a broker that specializes in the music industry. Insurance brokers essentially act on their clients' behalf as the middlemen between you as the client and the insurance agencies. So some of the things that you might want to raise with them are dependent. If you have premises, you might want to raise things about public liability, which is just to cover injury if someone's injured on your premises. If you are working with artists, you've already got your roster on board, then you want to look at professional indemnity, which is about protecting you if clients suffer financial loss. If you employ staff, lucky you, then you want to look at employers' public liability to cover your staff from accidents and injuries, as the public liability, as in the name, covers the public. Standard one, which I'm sure you guys wouldn't forget, but you want to look at some kind of policy that includes in travel insurance if you're traveling, also your own personal accidents. Oh, and another really good one to a good thing to remember that's included in your cover is cover for cancellations, so non-appearances. So if an artist is booked for a show and they don't turn up, and then you've signed the contract on their behalf and you're potentially liable for a cost for them not showing up, things like that, then you definitely want to get that covered. Also cancellations of recording time or costs which you may incur. You want to make sure that you've got some cover for that too. Now I'm going to move on to getting support for your business. So there are a lot of music colleges, well, music industry specific colleges and courses which are out there, which of course you can look into. There are also a lot of courses, like more short term ones that you don't have to register up to and sign up to for years, for example, for doing a degree or something longer term, but there are like day courses or ones that are a couple of hours. The ones that I would particularly recommend are the ones that the Music Managers Forum puts on. They are excellent. They cram so much information into a couple of hours, and they have a really great knowledgeable panel. And the ones I've been to have had an amazing facilitator. Like I said, I can really actually recommend those as well. They offer a discount for people who are actually members of the Music Managers Forum, and they also do events for people that are managers as well. So please do look that up. I don't work for them, but you will hear me speaking about them as a resource a lot, because there are loads of places to go, but this is one I would say that I would definitely trust, and as a member I can speak from experience as well. I would say also that in terms of some of the things that I've spoken about, particularly relating to the formal business structures, that you could look at 30 plus one membership. As I may have mentioned on the last podcast episode, that we have for your membership, you can get access to an accountant, you can get access to registered addresses. So we actually work with one of those formation agencies that I spoke about. You can also get access to a designer and savings on things like your business cards and your branding and all of that stuff. So definitely check that out. If you're getting support around networking, as I've said, there are events, so the Music Managers Forum events. You can Google other music manager and artist networking events as well. There aren't other ones that I recommend, but as and when only because I haven't been to a lot of other ones, but definitely as and when I experience those, and I will be making it my intention to get out to them, I'll definitely write up a review and share that with you guys as well. You can also have online sites that help you network, or apps. So there's I'm sure a plethora of them, but one that I use and can recommend and say, actually, there are quite a lot of artist managers on there. I'm not too sure, there are people on there who work in A&R, who are connected to labels, for example, but there's definitely a lot of other music managers you can network with on there. I use Shaper. I'm on there myself, so if you find me, connect. And then moving on, we're going to look at engaging your artist. So you've got your bit down about what you bring to the table, and that confidence is within you in terms of how you present yourself So it's good to assess what your artist's needs actually are. Where are they now? Where do they want to be? Just those basic questions, really. You know, how much time are they putting into their music? Who are the people with the careers that they aspire to? That kind of thing. So I actually have filters for artists. So filter questions that I use, because I only work with people who work harder than me. The artist needs to actually be working harder than me, because they are producing the material, the creative work, but they're also working with me to influence the promotion and the strategy and the tactics and all the stuff they do on social media. So that's definitely one thing I need. And I also need them to have done a lot of the groundwork. I'm not an advocate of people getting a manager too early. I just think it's not great from a manager's perspective. It's best that an artist comes to you when they are at a point where they have too much work that they can't take on themselves. There are exceptions, of course. It's just you need to weigh up for yourselves. There are, of course, exceptions, and there is definitely an excitement in also building an artist and working as a team from scratch. But I would still say that I would need to see that the artist is putting in a lot of work as well. After you've done your assessed what the artist needs are, and then you've got your kind of filters that are ready, then you need to think about where you find your artist. And I will just say quickly, going back to the filters as well, that I normally do this in an informal setting. So it's not like I create a questionnaire that they then fill in, although I have done that in the past and don't think there's anything wrong with that. But I like to conduct it in an informal setting, just so I can also see that side of the artist as well. I will definitely try and share some good practice with you guys about this filter as well. It will most likely be via the blog, so I'll definitely mention it here on the podcast whenever that is posted. But if you don't want to miss it and want to get it as soon as it's out, then please subscribe to the blog list on the website as well. But in terms of finding artists, there are so many places. And in fact, I'd like to see comments with some of the places that people have found their artists. I'd love to see, you know, the different, unusual, wonderful places that people have met the artists that they're working with now, or how, you know, serendipity might have played a part in it. I would love to see that. But some of the practical steps that I could say, so you could get in contact with the Musicians Union, which is the union that represents musicians. So you can get a lot of unsigned artists there. You can connect with the Music Managers Forum, which I think I've mentioned a billion times. And from now on, I'll probably say MMF. You can also find artists who may be people that you know. That's, I would say, the most common way that people find artists. You can also look on platforms like YouTube, SoundCloud, look for artists there, covers that you like, performances that you like, and just reach out and get in contact. You can go to open mic sessions. There's also, along that same vein, unsigned stages at festivals and showcases. I think this is a really, really good one, because for an artist to get to those stages or to get to those showcases, they've obviously put a lot of work in themselves, or a decent amount of work in themselves. So again, that kind of feeds into your filter, so you know that they've done that. Social media is also a good one. Yes, you can just do a general search for unsigned artists or artists in your genre and see what they're saying and kind of assess where they're at by their followers. But it's also, you'll find a bit of a pull. So without you having to go and find them, but with people sending you demos or getting in contact with you, that if you put in your profiles that you are a music manager, that you will also attract people who are looking for a manager, because the algorithms, I think, will also present you as a person that this artist, unsigned artist, may want to connect with. So that's another good way to do that as well. So once you have found them, you want to talk about engaging them. So you want to develop an action plan. And once you've assessed their needs and where their targets are, then you want to look at some of these general areas. Now, you may talk to them and things you identify may be completely outside, but they may fall into these general areas. So I've identified fan engagement, music production, income streams, achievements and milestones, funding, and areas of work. Also, your fees. You want to make sure that that's discussed while engaging your artist as well. But if we're just looking at the development plan, then those other areas that I've mentioned are a really good place to start. And it's quite good, as we're talking about fees, to move on to our final section, which is about contracts. They could have their own episode, as I think a lot of the issues, a lot of the subjects that are raised in this episode could as well. But contracts for sure could have their own episode. They are essentially the arrangement which sets out the terms of how you work between the artist manager and the artist. They're normally prepared by the manager with legal advice, and they should only be signed by the artist after they have received legal advice. One of the realities of a contract, this type of contract, is that it can be quite hard to enforce. It's a bit like an employment contract. So if you sign an employment contract for your brand new job and it stipulates what hours you should be working and your job description and where you're going to be placed, but then you decide, and I don't know, the contract's for 5 years. After 2 years, you leave the position. You don't hear much about employers then taking the employee to court because they've broken that contract and they are moving on after 2.5 years. And in fact, whilst they could try and claim for some financial compensation, they can't force that person back into work. So it's a bit, yeah, there are issues around the enforceability of these contracts, which has brought up a lot of debate about whether to contract or not to contract. Now, there are a lot of big management companies that don't use contracts. Not a lot, sorry. There are a few that I know that don't use contracts, and they work on a trust-based relationship and agree their terms as they go, or they have some basic agreements about this is how fees will happen, this is the work that we will do, this is the timescale we work to. I would say that irrespective of where you fall on the debate, and I've definitely done both, so worked with artists where I haven't started out with the contract and worked with artists where I have, that I think it's, regardless of whether it's legally enforceable in a court, that it's always very good to be clear about who does what, and as a minimum, who does what, by when, and what the financial compensation will be. I think it's really clear to, it's really good idea to start from that position of clarity. Although I see both sides of the argument, and it does still, but I don't think a contract takes away from it being a trusting relationship. And if you build a contract, if you write a contract, the areas that you definitely want to make sure are covered are what I've said before, who does what and financial compensation, but also who collects the money, the duration of the contract, what happens post the contract, what happens if the artist leaves before the duration, areas of work. You want to look at your scope of territories. So some managers don't talk about scope, but then you could spend all your time building up an artist in the UK. They gain a profile, then they get signed to a management team in the States. And that management team takes the royalties from sales in the states, which could potentially be huge, which they may not have even got exposed to, aside from the work that you were doing with them. So it's really important to be clear about that about territories for sure, and the responsibilities have already been mentioned. It doesn't need to be lengthy and complicated with loads of clause and sub-clauses. It can be really simple, and I think that those are always the best contracts as well, that literally just say, this is what I'm doing, this is what you're doing, this is what we're agreeing to, this is how, you know, I think those ones are the best. There are some templates, and they're fairly clear as well, that you can use as a starting position from both the MMF and the Musicians Union. So you can contact either of those for both. Like I said, I'm also happy to share the type of contract that I would use, or the points that I've raised with an artist as well. So you'll be able to find those either on the blog, on the resources page, but I'll definitely put a link in the show notes as well when that becomes available. So as part of the contract, you want to look at fees and royalties. Now, it's a bit of a standard to look at 20% as the commission rate. Now, it does vary. Some artists get more while an artist is developing, and then it gets less depending on what they're earning. But 20% is a pretty good guideline. I have heard a rumor, I don't know whether this is true, that it came from the Beatles and their manager, essentially being the fifth manager of the band. And so all the income was split between them all, which meant they all had 20%. I've heard this. I cannot qualify whether or not it's true. So the positions to be negotiated around, so less the percentage, let's say, are more about where that percentage is coming from. So is it coming from recording income? So this is CD sales, streaming income, that income. Is it coming from publishing income? So publishing is if the artist has a publishing arrangement which allows for them to exploit the music that they have written, so have it attached commercially to a TV show, an advert, a film, and some money that they have from that. Would your percentage be coming from that? Would it be coming from touring income, merchandise, or sponsorship? If your artist has a sponsorship arrangement, or, you know, will it be coming from all those streams? Which ones are included? Which one isn't included? Which one will you focus on? Or maybe percentages will change amongst each of those outlets. So those are some things that to think about and that needs to be agreed with the artist. There's a lot more information on fees and royalties and all of that all of that kind of category of things in the MMF's book, The Music Manager's Bible. It's pretty comprehensive, but particularly good, I would say, around this section, and I would recommend it for sure. So we've packed in a lot today, and I am not sure of the timing at this point, pre-uploading and listening back to it again, but I really hope that it has been helpful. Please do check out the show notes for things that I've mentioned. Please do also go to the Facebook page, like it, of course. Oh, I've not asked you guys to do this yet, but it would be great if you've liked this episode, and if you like the second one, not only to join us a third one, but to subscribe as well and to leave us some feedback. That'd be amazing. And yeah, that's it really for my calls to action and my pleas. But I just want to end by saying thank you. Thanks for listening to this episode. Thank you for coming back if this is the second time. And yeah, just thank you all so much for the support. I'm truly, truly, truly grateful. So with that, I'm going to sign off, and I hope to see you next time. Bye. Thank you for listening to 30 Plus One for Music Managers at 30plus1.co.